whistle while you work. Put on that grin and start right in to whistle loud and long. Just hum a merry tune.
Welcome to Company Break, a program dedicated to the companies and organizations in our local area, giving them a chance to talk about what services they can provide for you, our WCRI listeners. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Company Break. I'm Mike Mano, and very pleased this morning to be sitting with a representative from the Mystic Seaport Museum. Nicholas Bell is here. He is Senior Vice President. Welcome, Nicholas.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning.
Nice to have you with us, and we can find out everything we want to know about the Mystic Seaport Museum. Now, we're talking about Mystic, Connecticut, first off, obviously, and most people, I'm sure, that have traveled anywhere in New England have either driven by, know of it, been there a lot, continue to go back. I know that I kind of grew up in the area, and I brought my son there when he was 2, and I brought him there when he was 5, and I brought him there when he was 10, and kind of a regular thing for a lot of people. So I think the notoriety of the Mystic Seaport Museum is fairly well known, but tied in with the Mystic Seaport, right?
Absolutely. And what we've noticed over the many decades we've been open is that people like you, Mike, love to come to the museum, but they often only come in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And they think of us as an outdoor destination, which is perfectly reasonable, of course,
sure,
because we have 19 acres along the Mystic River.
Right.
But we also want people to understand that we can be an all-season destination. And we also wanted to create a new sense of urgency around visiting the museum, which is why, 3 years ago, we built our Thompson Exhibition Building, which is that magnificent, very contemporary new building right on the banks of the Mystic River,
mm-hmm,
that is a new front door to our museum and gives us an opportunity to do some pretty cool indoor programming as well as that village and that shipyard that you already know and love so well.
Right. Now, I know several months ago we had some people on from your organization, and they talked about an exhibition, and that indeed was in the facility you're talking about, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what was so much fun about the show we did this past summer is it was all about our own collections. So it was taking boats and engines and photographs and even toasters from the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and helping people to understand how they were all related and told a story about American design. But the great part about this building is it not only lets us show our own collections at Mystic Seaport Museum, it lets us bring in some pretty amazing loans from institutions around the world.
It's a large space, so you can do a lot of things. Let's back up a little bit, find out a little bit about you. Are you a New England person, or are you?
Actually, I am not. Uh-oh. I'm originally from Vancouver in Canada.
Well, that's okay. Canadians.
Is that allowed?
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. We just don't like, we didn't want to know if you were from New York. You
know? No. I visit, but I don't think that they would let me stay.
Yeah, Vancouver, and you grew up there. And what was your interest in school that got you into a position here at Mystic?
Well, it's funny. I originally went to school for political science, and it didn't stick terribly well. My whole life changed when I took a class called Things and Stuff. I suddenly realized, wait a second, things and stuff are pretty interesting. And not only are they interesting, but if you try really hard, you can make a living understanding them.
And
so that was
stuff.
That was the introduction to
right,
museums as a career path.
I see.
I've never looked back.
That's excellent. And Mystic is the destination because of the job, I presume.
Did you come
here and then get the job?
Well, no, I came here for the job, but okay, it's also a pretty fantastic place to live, as I think many of your listeners know.
Right, it's a beautiful spot, and it's as far as a museum and seaport is concerned, it's very easy to get to right off the exit of 95. It's like a minute off the highway,
mm-hmm,
so it's very, very, very easy to get. What is the 89, exit 89?
Exit 90.
90.
It's exit 90.
Okay, exit 90 off of Interstate 95, north or south. And you just drive down the road, and I think it's Greenmanville Avenue. Is that right?
That's right. It's almost like you've been there before, Mike.
Yeah, I have. I have been there before, and it's a great area. All right, let's get into a little bit of the specifics about some of the shows that go on. And again, Mystic Seaport, as you mentioned, a lot of people, you know, would go there to see the whaling ship, and they'd walk around outside and enjoy the outside, but we want to get the indoor part that you're promoting now for the upcoming fall and into the winter.
Yes, so we have a really exciting exhibition opening in just 1 week, next Saturday morning, October 5th. And this is watercolors by Joseph Mallord William Turner, JMW Turner, the great British artist. These watercolors are coming to us from Tate Gallery in London, which is the home of most of Turner's artwork, all of the great artwork that he left upon his death in 1851. And we are looking right now down the barrel of what we believe to be the largest exhibition of Turner works from Tate ever to travel to North America.
Wow. So that's something that a lot of people would enjoy, that because I believe his work is not just what you might expect, boats as such, but there's lots of other objects.
Well, he was an extraordinarily varied artist. So yeah. He was born in London in 1775. He was the son of a barber in Covent Garden in London, and he was of very modest means. He did not grow up with all sorts of opportunity, but he made those opportunities. And in fact, he was what we might call today a child prodigy, in the sense that he applied himself at an extremely early age to the art of watercolor. Mm-hmm. And by the age of, say, 10 or 12, was showing those watercolors in his father's barbershop window for sale to passersby. And already by the age of 14 was inducted into the School of the Royal Academy, where he began to develop his skills more seriously and began to be noticed as a very promising young man. By the time he was 20, he was brought into the Royal Academy as a fully fledged member, and really was the youngest member at that time ever elected to the Royal Academy. And really, by his early 20s, was already recognized as one of the greatest artists and most promising artists of his age, right at the close of the 18th century. But he did all sorts of different things. So
yeah,
we know
that's what I was getting at. It's not just an exhibition of boats, right?
Absolutely not. Turner was vociferously interested in all walks of contemporary life in his own age, and really helped to pioneer the burgeoning field of landscape painting. And so you have, by coming now to Mystic Seaport, the opportunity to see him really develop as an artist from his teenage years all the way until his 70s. And that is crossing every boundary of painting at this time, whether it be landscapes, marine paintings, mm-hmm. as you can imagine, interior paintings, paintings of great houses, or really also the idea that he is traveling across England, Wales, Scotland, and then as soon as the Napoleonic Wars end and permit freer travel on the European continent, him traveling to Italy and to France and to Switzerland and to Germany and consuming all of this great visual information to take back with him to a British audience and translate for them into something that gives them the riches of the travel that they may not be able to afford.
That's amazing. Now, when you have a space like you have at this new building in Mystic Seaport, what causes you to go after an exhibit like this? In other words, who said, I've got an idea, let's have an exhibit on motorboat motors, you know? And then someone says, well, how about knot tying or sail making? But this is a little bit out of the realm of what people might normally expect to see there.
Sure, right? Sure. And for this particular exhibition, Mike, there is a very clear line as to how this happened. And it really goes back to before the building was built. The building, of course, opened at the end of 2016. We were very excited. But if you go back a few years into conversations around the museum community about why we might want to develop a major exhibitions program, those conversations started to really crystallize around the idea that you needed a physical platform, a building, to present to the world the museum as a place that was worthy of great loans of artworks and artifacts from around the world, and also worthy of showing our collections in the highest regard. And as we were communicating to Central Brick Architects in Connecticut, what we wanted out of that platform in terms of the security, the climate control, the aesthetic value and presentation, we, as a community of maritime enthusiasts, summed up all of our desires for this public platform into one phrase. And that phrase, Mike, was, this building needs to be good enough for Turner. Because Turner, for us, represents the pinnacle of artistic expression as it dovetails with our interest in maritime art and history.
That's amazing. So the building had to be there, had to be secure. You know, people don't think, let's just put up a building. And climate control, obviously very important. Security, extremely important. That the average person will just say, well, you got a barn, we'll throw some paintings up and have an exhibit, you know. but the average person doesn't think of all the details and the amount of work and the thousands, I'm sure, of man hours that went into planning a building like this. So it's a great explanation of how this all got put together, how it all started, and now it's a valuable part of the community.
Exactly. And what we've wanted is for this building and this new entryway to our campus really to serve as a cultural jewel for New England, for people to realize that there is as strong a venue for works and arts and history of global significance on their doorstep in southern New England, so that you don't always have to go into Boston or into Providence or into New York, that you can come to Mystic and the Seaport and see great exhibitions without fighting the traffic, by the way.
Well, there you go, and free parking. So it is a lot different than if you were to travel into Boston, or I know I live in Providence, and we have the RISD Museum, which is a world-class
fantastic museum.
But it gives that opportunity to, you think of the RISD Museum, for example, and they're always changing exhibitions, and there's no theme particularly to those things changing. So that's why it makes sense that you have a building of that level now that you can, you'll have something after Turner.
Absolutely. And so if you came last summer, you would have seen Boats and Toasters. Great. If you come this fall, this winter, you see Turner. Mm-hmm. And if you come next spring, beginning at the beginning of May of 2020, you will see a massive contemporary installation by the Japanese artist Motoi Yamamoto, who works exclusively with, wait for it, salt.
Did you say salt?
I did say salt, Mike.
As in salt and pepper?
As in salt and pepper. So what you're seeing us develop around the museum right now is a major exhibitions program that has a thread running through it that is not disciplinary. It is not tied to a particular historic period.
Right.
It is tied to the idea that we are connected to the sea and to our mission to help people, visitors and Americans, understand our maritime experience. And so that may be us dipping back into the 19th century, as we did this past winter with Sir John Franklin trying to navigate the Northwest Passage. It may be with streamlined design. It may be with Turner. It may be with contemporary artists navigating new materials or old materials like salt.
Mm-hmm.
But all of these are tied into the mission of the museum, which is that we will help people to understand how we are related to this natural force.
All right. And if you want to get more information, you certainly can go to the website. There's a lot of information there about what's going on, when it's going on, hours, things like that. And it's a pretty simple website, right? It's
mysticseaport.org.
That's it. mysticseaport.org. And check it out. And we're going to take a short break, but we'll be back with a lot more. We are back on Company Break. I'm Mike Mano and having a very pleasant morning sitting with Nicholas Bell. He is a Senior Vice President at Mystic Seaport Museum, and we've been talking about a Turner exhibition coming in next week. Right, Nicholas?
That's right. Opens Saturday morning, October 5th.
And Saturday morning, October 5th, and people will be, I'm sure, I don't know if they'll be lined up down the street, but I'm sure they'll be anxious to get in on that opening day.
I would be thrilled if they were lined up down the street, Mike.
It would be a great thing to happen.
So I think it's important for your listeners to understand what a momentous occasion this is for New England, because this is not only Turner's coming from Tate in London. It is, as I mentioned, we believe the largest number of Turners ever to come from Tate in London to North America.
Now, let me interrupt you. Does that mean six? Seven pieces, 20 pieces.
Are you ready, Mike?
I'm ready.
It means 97.
97 works of art.
97
all watercolor
of art.
All pretty much?
Almost all watercolors.
Yeah.
But, for good measure, it also includes four magnificent oil paintings. And I think this is important for an audience, especially of people who are art lovers, it also includes a sketchbook. And if you want to understand one of the greatest artists in Western art history, you have to see where they came from, which is not always the things that you get that you produce to put on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
It's often the artworks that are created as they're trying to get to a finished product. And what's so exciting about what we call the Turner Bequest is it includes all of the sketches, all of the sketchbooks, all of the draft watercolors, all of these unfinished artworks that were in his studio at the time he died in 1851, and that allow us to see him working towards his genius. Not just that he woke up one day and he was great at everything,
right,
but that he strived, that he tried day after day after day, but also that he had an extraordinary visual memory for what he was seeing, so that he could go and do the simplest pencil sketches, let's say walking through Venice or across the Alps, and then take that back to his studio, take that back to his hotel room perhaps, and turn that into a dramatic artwork.
Right. And it wasn't necessarily, as you say, the sketch is kind of an outline, more or less, not necessarily what the painting is going to end up like, because he embellishes it and changes it and adds things.
Exactly.
And so forth. His memory may have picked up something else.
Exactly.
My vivid memory of visiting the Norman Rockwell Museum was that I thought, oh, they have the sketches, some of them for sale. Now, this was a long time ago. This has got to be 30-plus years ago.
Oh, I wish I was there then.
Yeah. And I said, oh, I'm gonna buy one of these. This would be great to frame one of these. And there were no prices, of course. And I went and asked one of the people.
If you have to ask, Mike.
I did have to ask. And when I found out it was several thousand dollars, I said, no, I think I'll pass on a napkin sketch for several thousand dollars. But you know what? I probably should have bought it.
Yeah, looking back,
yeah,
right? 2020.
So I'm sure that the sketches and things that you're going to be showing of his are just invaluable.
They are invaluable. And that's why we as a museum community are so honored by the partnership that we've been able to develop with Tate in London, is they have recognized us, Mystic Seaport Museum, as an equal partner that is able to take on invaluable work from the great wealth of what they maintain right there on the banks of the Thames, and bring it here, because they also recognize that by coming to Mystic, by coming to southeastern Connecticut, they are reaching out to an audience that isn't necessarily the same people that will be at the Met or at the MFA, that mm-hmm. they can reach new audiences by mm-hmm. working with us. And so we feel that we're both getting something exciting out of this relationship.
I think that a lot of people, when they find out about this, could be living in downtown Manhattan and jump in the car and say, I'm going to Mystic.
I sure hope so.
And the same with Boston and Providence and Hartford and everywhere else, or that little Norman Rockwell Museum up in Western Massachusetts.
And
they'll be making the trip down.
Well, if you're listening to the radio right now and you're thinking to yourself, I can't wait to see this show, we want you to consider coming on the very first day, next Saturday, October 5th, because at 10:30 in the morning, I will be sitting down with David Blaney Brown, senior curator of 19th century British art at the Tate, and he and I are going to have a conversation. Why Turner? What is his relevance? Why is his art so powerful to us today? And he and I are going to walk through a number of specific artworks in the exhibition and really dig into them. This is meaty stuff, and it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to get a senior scholar who has spent the last 40 years studying Turner's in the great wealth of Tate's archives, and to bring him to us and say, what's this all about? 10:30, Saturday, October 5th. I want to see you there.
All right. Well, I wish I could be there. Unfortunately, I'm going to be out of town on October 5th, but I'm sure you're going to have a recording of it, I would hope, made so that people that can't possibly be there will be able to pick up on all
That's
those
a good
questions.
Idea.
Make a recording and, you know, maybe a little podcast thing that can go on. We can help you with that sort of thing.
I bet you can.
So that's an amazing opportunity to sit down. You know, one would think about all of these, you say 90 pieces, which is very expansive. I mean, a lot of space is necessary for that. And then you think about, okay, so the museum back in England, there's got to be some holes on the wall. 90 pieces are gone. What do they do?
You might think that, Mike, except the Turner, what we call the Turner Bequest, is so massive. And let me give you a little background to this, because it's a really interesting story.
Okay.
when Turner dies in 1851, he is the most successful British artist. He's immensely wealthy. He's had a lot of time to consider what he wants his legacy to be. And so he writes his will, and his will says, when I die, I will leave 100 finished oil paintings to the British nation, and I would like you, nation, to build a wing onto the National Gallery on Trafalgar Square, and it will be the Turner Wing, and you'll come here, and you'll see my edited version, my curated version of how I want to be perceived by you. Hmm. Does that happen? No, that doesn't happen. Because, why? When somebody of that immense wealth and standing dies, even in 1851, all of those distant relatives come out of the woodwork and say, oh,
no,
my poor,
mine.
Poor fifth cousin twice removed Billy Turner is gone. I miss him so much. I never knew him, but I miss him. Mm. And all of those cousins have to be dealt with in the courts.
Yeah.
And by the time you get through the family, 5 years later, you have what I still find to be a strangely progressive decision by the British nation in 1856. They say, you know what? Forget what Turner wrote in his estate. What we would like is, and I don't remember the exact words, but everything in the artist's studio without regard for finished or unfinished. And so they do not take 100 finished oil paintings, the curated version. They take 350-ish oil paintings in every state of composure. They take every sketchbook that Turner used from his teenage years until his 70s. And they take upwards of 20,000 watercolors. 20,000 sheets of paper. And if you imagine for a moment Turner's dilapidated studio on Queen Anne Street in London, a place that apparently was so egregious to its neighbors that one critic wrote it looked as if it was the place of a murder. If you take this studio and you open it up almost like an Egyptian tomb in 1851, you find drawers upon drawers upon drawers stuffed with watercolors and sketches and oil paintings standing against the wall being dripped on and having cats walk across them. It was a mess. But the good news for all of us is that entire mess is inducted into British knowledge and memory, and thus into all of our memory, because it is now all accessible to us as a sort of matrix of the artist's brain and entire working life. So that what sounds like a lot for us, and it really is, I mean, 97 works is more than has ever perhaps been shown from this particular cluster of works. It is still only a drop in the bucket of the artist's working life.
It's so inconceivable when you stop and think, when you say 1,000 watercolors, and you said there were many, many more than that. But think about doing 1,000 paintings.
I can't actually think about it.
and how long it would take for the average artist. I mean, I know quite a few artists, and, you know, they'll spend a week on something or 2 weeks or sometimes 3 weeks or more. And you're talking thousands of pieces of artwork.
And we know he works quickly. We can tell that he works quickly. He is so confident in his abilities that he simply pushes forward and he pushes ahead. He is not resting on his laurels. He is not dithering about whether he should do this or that. He is charging ahead, and you see the evidence of that in the artwork. But also, there's so much control. It's really remarkable. And the benefit of this exhibition will be seeing the depth and breadth of that bequest so that you really understand how he develops over this 60-year career.
That's amazing. And we want to stress that this, of course, is the Mystic Seaport Museum. But as we've talked about earlier in the program, that it's not necessarily having anything to do with Mystic Seaport, other than the fact that that's where you're located, and it's the museum that's showing this exhibition that's not necessarily just maritime.
No, it's not at all just maritime. Although, for those people, for those listeners who have an affinity for the sea, let's say this is Rhode Island we're in after all, or who have looked with romance at a boat once in their life, they will find much to love here.
Yeah.
And one of the pieces that we are really excited to host is not a watercolor. It's a major oil painting called Whalers from 1845.
Whalers.
Okay. It is a large oil painting of whale ships at work in the Atlantic Ocean at the very same time that Mystic Seaport Museum's own Charles W. Morgan was at sea conducting that same practice. So there are affinities between the Turners and Mystic. But there is absolutely something for everyone. And my favorite works, I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say this. My favorite works
in
the exhibition.
We'll keep it a secret, just between you and I.
My favorite works in the exhibition, I think, are these dashed off little sketches on blue paper that you will see that are not necessarily maritime, but are sometimes European locations, Venice, the Rhine River, the Seine in France. But these sketches that just give you a sense of a man in a place at a very particular moment living his life.
Mm-hmm. And it's no different than someone taking, in today's times, they're taking pictures with their phones of all the different places they travel to. In his case, he sketched every place.
Absolutely.
He traveled to.
And again, what's exciting about working from the bequest itself is these are not works that were meant to be public. He did not plan for the future of these sketches on blue paper, for example. They were souvenirs for himself. They were things for him to refer to down the road as he was looking for ideas. But they were never meant to be shown to people. We really are seeing the artist in private.
Mm-hmm. Which is a very interesting and a very unique thing. So I encourage you all. The exhibition is not just next Saturday. It's going to be running for a long time.
It is. We're running it all the way into late February. And this is important, Mike, because one of the things we wanted to do with this building was help people to understand that Mystic Seaport Museum is an all-season venue. I said this at the beginning, but let's reiterate this. Mm-hmm. You can come on the coldest day of the year and see one of the great exhibitions in the country. I think we often have a challenge that people look outside and they say, is it sunny? I'll go to Mystic. Is it raining? Maybe not. This building and other buildings around it give us the opportunity to help you see us in a new light. And that is as a place that is just as welcoming to you in winter as it is in summer.
And maybe even more so. It's a great destination and it's a great place to go to. So mysticseaport.org is the website. And we've been talking with Nicholas Bell. He is the Senior Vice President there. Nicholas, it's amazing to get all of your input about this upcoming show. I don't know if a show is the correct term.
It's what we call it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a show.
It's a show. And it certainly is entertainment, so it's a show. It's valuable, and it's a great service you're doing for the community, and I want to thank you for coming in today and explaining to us. We have just another minute or so to wrap up. I don't know if you want to just have any final thoughts before we go, or invite everybody to see them next Saturday and for the next several months.
I think the important thing to remember is everything you need to know about this exhibition and visiting the museum this fall and this winter is at mysticseaport.org. That's your gateway to everything. And otherwise, we are excited to see you. I hope to see you on October 5th and every day after.
Excellent. Thank you, Nicholas. And the rest of you, we'll see you next time on Company Break.
Whistle while you work.
Thank you for listening to WCRI's presentation of Company Break. I'm Mike Maino, hoping you have a great weekend.